Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we're joined today by Lee Wichman, Managing Director of the Chicago Actors Call to Action. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Yeah, no problem. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm a little tired from
me
tech.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were mentioning. So you we actually found out about you from Tiara Burge.
Yeah.
Who came on last week. She was part of Island.
She called you out.
She called me out.
She was part of your plug.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She came to our last event. Eiler's like, we had this long marathon weekend of rehearsals because the director flew in from Pittsburgh, and I was like, oh, could you, it's, I know it's the end of this long weekend, it was that gorgeous weekend in Chicago, and
yeah,
it was like 65-70, and I was like, but Sunday night at 6:30, just three blocks away at the Promontory, we're having our event, and
yeah,
it would be super cool if you guys come. And she was one of the ones that came, and I was like,
cool.
Yeah, it was really great. And she goes, you guys were, that was an amazing show. So she just was really behind us.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's very supportive in that way.
She is.
She's good
and
people.
She owes me a boozy milkshake because she's planted those two words in my head and I can't get them out of my head. Specifically the s'mores boozy milkshake.
Where's boozy
her
milkshake spot, do you know?
She told me there's this place called 25 Degrees on Chicago Avenue, maybe?
I've never heard of it.
Apparently, like, we bonded over being foodies and and drinkies.
Yeah.
And she's like, I promise you, I'll give you a boozy mochi. Yeah.
Good.
Well, her and I were roommates for 2 years? A year?
I thought it was just a year.
Just a year. I get it all mixed up. The past. What is that even?
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's
her
really good
voice is amazing, and she's just, like, the most amazing, non-pretentious, nice person.
I know.
And yeah,
funny.
And, like, open about her, like, introversion and also very sociable and, like, very supportive, and she's just good people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so the thing that is really cool is that lately we've been talking so much about making art in this time, and in a time where we've kind of, the nation has made an interesting decision. and, you know, and I think that seems to be, I'm very glad that we have you on for that reason. So would you mind telling us a little bit about CACTA?
Yes, I'll do that. So, well, I'll back up. I'll say in addition to being an actor in Chicago, I'm also a psychotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way this all kind of came to be was after the election, a number of things happened. One, I had a week of work where I was seeing patients all week, and a lot of my colleagues and I said it was like working 9/11 all over again.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's like unlike other people's jobs where they can just go and check out in front of a computer and like try not to think about how messed up everything is, I have to go to a job where you have to actually listen to people talking and crying about it all week long. And then by the end of the week, you're like totally fried.
Yeah.
And I know two of my female patients in specific, in particular, were really, really deeply troubled. I mean, everyone was really bothered, but I have two female patients whose both of them had parents who voted for him, and they each have three daughters, and it was like they were just sobbing for the whole 50-minute sessions because it's like their parents threw them under the bus. They felt, and it was right before Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they were all freaking out. What am I going to do when we go home for the holidays?
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to be at the table sitting around my family. And so by the end of that week, I was, and I mean, plus, like, we're all going through
right.
it too.
Yeah.
So, and then on top of that, I'm seeing all the actors I know and just friends and other therapists posting things on Facebook, like, how scared, how sad they were, how shocked they were, how angry they are, and mostly how powerless they were feeling, like just really helpless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then some people started posting things like, well, we can't just post about it. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And that like started resonating. And a good friend of mine said, you have to watch this John Oliver show. And I don't have cable or HBO, so, but it was on YouTube, so it's 20 minutes long, and he's amazing.
Oh yeah.
So it was his last show of the year, which was all about the election right after the election. It was the Fuck You 2016 show. Yeah. You saw it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was amazing. And he said, you can't move to Canada unless you're a citizen or a goose. You have to stay and fight. And then he said, here's how. And he listed 7 different organizations that are going to need our money and help now more than ever because they're going to be threatened under a Trump administration. And he listed Planned Parenthood, NAACP, the Trevor Project, ACLU, Mexican American Defense Fund. I mean, so and then I went to New York. I said I need to like get away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I went to New York, came back, won the lottery to Hamilton, which was phenomenal. And then the next day I started this discussion group on Facebook. I didn't even know how to start a discussion group on Facebook because like I use a Palm Pilot, but someone showed me.
You use
me.
A Palm Pilot?
I do. I can show it to you. Yeah.
But is that they make like a bunch of models of Palm Pilot, right? Like
they used to.
Oh, really?
No, it's just one.
No, they don't make any.
Oh yeah.
I can't even hot sync it.
How old is your Palm Pilot?
It's probably old enough to vote. So.
Amazing.
It's oh cute God. Though. It looks really retro.
That's really cool though.
Oh my
yeah.
God, that's so cute.
Now everyone's like, "What is that? A BlackBerry?"
I'm gonna take a picture of it. I'm gonna post it on picture. Our Facebook.
You could. I posted a picture on our Facebook. I said, "Guys, I don't know how to do this, but someone showed me how to start a Facebook discussion group."
Now, so and let this be a testament to my ignorance. that has Wi-Fi.
What
is that? Does that get to the internet? Like how?
No, this does nothing. It has a really good calculator, and okay. I can schedule like my day. Look.
Oh, okay. All right. No.
And sorry, it has an address book. But look, okay, that's all I need.
Oh, that's nice.
It is absolutely all that you need.
Except, I can no longer like back it up on my hard drive like I used to because they know it's obsolete. Like it's literally like. It probably should go in a museum where they have Atari and
Atari
and Commodore computers
and
cassette
your,
tapes
and your Palm Pilot.
Exactly.
My day job, the guy that I work for has a Palm Pilot. Philip has a Palm Pilot. Philip Gossett.
Really? I'm not the only one?
No.
He is 70 though.
Okay, I'm not quite there yet. let's go back to the
shots fired. Well, sorry. No.
And the other thing I really love about that is it's really easy on the eyes.
It is.
Yeah, which I think is really important. I think that they're making, and we keep talking about this. This is the third time I've plugged this, but the iPhone keeps making the colors brighter because they know it like spikes the dopamine, and so you can go into your settings and turn on black and white, basically like grayscale, basically.
I'm sorry, my Samsung Galaxy is smarter than the iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Well, I think after Steve Jobs, like, the innovation has really kind of died out over at Apple.
Yeah.
Well, his whole thing was all about, like, the look of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, which is so important.
Well, and also so how, something and, like, and the user-friendly and kind of just, like, ready to go it is, I think.
User friendly.
Yeah.
That's super user friendly, that Palm
Pilot. Oh, the Palm Pilot? I bet.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the Sunday after Thanksgiving, the 27th of November, I started this Facebook discussion group. And I thought, I've been here since 1992, but I thought, people don't really know me. So I don't know if anyone will know who I am. So, but I said, I have this idea. So I'd watched the John Oliver show. I went to New York. I had that week of patience, which was horrific. And then everyone posting things. And I thought, well, why don't we do something like what John Oliver was saying? We have so much talent in this community, the acting community of Chicago. It's huge and vast. And we could all pool together all our resources and use our talents and put on an event once a month to benefit a different one of these organizations that's going to need our help. And also maybe raise awareness and not just raise money, but to also take action steps and help create an audience base that will want to do more. I said, but I can't do this alone because I don't know how to even use, I have a Palm Pilot. So I said, but I also don't know, I'm not that networked and I don't have the skill sets. So I would need a planning committee of like at least 6 to 8 people. And or it's just going to die in the water. And that was like what I said that Sunday, the 27th. And I posted the video of the YouTube video of John Oliver's show. And I said, this is where I got my idea. And this is kind of what I'm thinking. But let me know what you guys think. And then in that first week, five people said, I'll help you be on your planning committee. And I said, great. That would be a good start. So there's six of us. And then a bunch of people would like say, I can't commit to more than coming to one event and singing a song, but I'd love to do it. I love what you're doing. And so we got these six of us together to meet, and it was amazing. Like, they all have different skill sets that I don't have. Like, one of them was great at designing our website and our logo, and another one was great at doing the Facebook pages and PR. And then our music person is phenomenal, and she's really well connected with the music theater community and was able to tap into getting the like top-notch Chicago talents to come sing at our performances. Yeah. And our non-musical theater person is really connected, was my first acting teacher, which is like, I'm like, how is she on my committee? Yeah. And we have the secretary of CACTA, who is our production manager, and she has like lots of amazing experience producing. And I was like, this is exactly, it was just like we gel, like it was all the different skills I didn't have, and we did it, just we complemented each other really well. Mm-hmm. So it was like a really good starting base, and then the group started just growing. So the closed discussion group is now over 1,000 people.
Oh wow.
I know. And it's like, we just had 3 months, was February 27th. I'm like, this is unbelievable. So, and we put on, this month will be our third event. So the idea was that we would start after the at the start of the year, after the inauguration and the Million Women Marches, we'd have our first event, our own inaugural event, on the 23rd of January. And mm-hmm. We said, just like John Oliver, let's kind of use that as a jumping off point. And we had Planned Parenthood be our first beneficiary, and it was right on the heels of the inauguration and all the marches and Uncommon Ground on Devon, which is amazing. Like,
such
right,
a cool space,
the first green restaurant, and it's all about sustainable, and they have their own like rooftop organic garden. I mean, and I knew the owners,
there's a couple solar panels up there too.
It's amazing. Have you ever been up there?
No.
You can
see the pan, like, because you could see one of them when you're driving past.
You can take a tour if you ask.
Really?
Yeah, I think. I mean, yeah, I knew them, and they that. So I was like, well, that would be like the perfect space. And both Uncommon Grounds have a music room, and I was like, well, that might be the, and so places like that, a lot of the businesses and vendors want to also do something and help. So, and it's a Monday night, which is dark for actors, so it's like a win-win, because they are going to bring in a crowd to have dinner and drinks, and they wanted to help out, so they just donated the venue.
And it's not a busy night for them.
It's not a busy night. Mm-hmm. Plus, they're going to make money because we brought people into the restaurant, and they want to do something and help us, so they donated their venue space to us. And then we got together like seven female singers and one trans identified Latinx singer, because I said we can't just represent women for Planned Parenthood, because they also do so much for the LGBT community.
That is so huge to me. That is so huge, because like, when you're talking about the female population, so many people immediately just jump to like biologically, like,
yep,
just like, you know, draw the line there, but the female identity has expanded so much. And so it's awesome to me that you had a representative from that expanded.
Yeah. It was really important to me to represent the trans community, because those were some of the people I were talking to who were the most scared and terrified that they're going to, if they get defunded, then they're going to lose their healthcare rights. And like, that's like how they get their hormones and the medications they need. And so a lot of the trans community was feeling, and still, obviously, there's just been recent things happening.
There's a lot. It's they're definitely the front line right now.
Yep.
That community. And it's hard to like know how to help, to like, to, you know, so many things. I have a question real quick. And you can, of course, come back.
Yeah, we'll start.
But I am really interested in the thought of of delegation, and I'm really interested in your past as a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said, and I want you to say it, and I think there's something to be said about that field, and then stepping into like a managing director position, because there's so much delegation, and there's so much, I'm trying to think of a better way to put it besides just being able to read people.
Leadership?
Yeah, but also like being able to know.
Like assess people's strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah, and say like, as the person that is the leader, and saying like, this person should do this, this person should do this, and this person should do this. I think you also have to have a really strong recognition of like, why this person should do that. And why that person should do that. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's kind of come up at all?
Yeah. In a lot of ways that you might not even be right. suspecting, or that I wasn't. Like, my skill sets all kind of came together in this way that I wasn't really expecting at first. And I mm-hmm. thought, oh, well, actually, that's really good. Like, so, well, before I became a psychotherapist, I was doing an internship in two internships in directing to be a theater director. That was what I wanted to do after college. And then I brought me down here and I assistant directed a few shows down here. And then I switched over to acting and I did that for a while. And then I stopped and I said, I need to do something that's going to support myself better. Yeah. So yeah. I went to grad school and got a master's in counseling psychology at Northwestern and became a psychotherapist. And I didn't think I was going to go back to acting. I just thought I'm gonna be a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. And I just got, you know, it took me, so I took like a big break of like 8 to 10 years away from theater and acting and built up my own private practice. But then I really missed acting, so I got back into it about 10 years ago, and it's kind of like starting all over again. Because all the people I knew back then now are like at the top of the fields or are celebrities. And like then all the people now are like, oh, I don't really know you.
Yeah.
So, but I thought, well, maybe there's some way to make use of both of these. And so then I started seeing, like, I like working with a lot of artists. So a lot of my patients are actors, improv people, musicians, singers or fine artists, which is really cool. And I used to be really careful about not telling people I'm an actor and keeping boundaries, but now I actually tell my acting patients and some of my other patients that I'm an actor, because we're gonna know people in common,
right?
And it's cool. I'll go see their shows, they'll come to my shows, and like they like it because they know I'll get it when they're talking about auditioning and stuff. So but then when I formed the group, so as a psychotherapist, one of my areas of expertise is in group dynamics, which is not group therapy, it's group dynamics. And
that's cool.
Yeah, so this is gonna go circle
you saw back my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I'm like, I'll get back to the question. So I used to, there's a specific model of group dynamics that I learned at Northwestern, and it's like this really sophisticated analytic system based model. And it's not therapy, it's like it's just group dynamics that applies to all groups. And I would consult every year at Northwestern on these conferences. It's called the Tavistock model of group dynamics. And so I became a consultant and I would consult every year at the conference on this model. And so I'm always thinking from this lens of that model of group dynamics, which is really amazing. Like, it's like mind-blowing, but it's like a way of understanding group phenomenon, such as how did this guy get elected president,
right?
Maybe the whole world actually elected him in some unconscious, collective unconscious way. So when I started this group, and now we have over 1,000 members and I have my planning committee, I was thinking, I'm always thinking through that lens. And one of the first things that came up, because the six of us are all white, but there's still a lot of diversity. Like, two of us are identified as gay, one's identified as bisexual, and then we have a woman who's over 60, and so she's identified, you know. So there's like all this, plus they all have different skill sets. I'm like, that's diversity too. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of people of color and people of different minorities in the group. And I was like paying attention to seeing how like even all the comments and people posting things, I was mostly white people. And then even people liking the posts, mostly white people. And I'm like, I'm always thinking about that.
Yeah.
And then some of the people in my planning committee were saying, we need to get people of color and get people from the minority groups. And I said, yeah, we do, but it will happen. And they're probably, people are watching to see what we do because we haven't done anything yet. And they want to make sure it's going to be safe and that we want to help them and we're not going to hurt them.
Yeah.
And so I'm just thinking through that lens. So a lot of the skills that I didn't expect, but obviously are useful, are skills not just as a therapist, but like from having that sense of the larger,
absolutely,
how groups work and operate, like how any group would function, and having to kind of be mindful of that piece of it too. So, you know, like how to respond to different people, whether it's a post or in my group, or, you know, mm-hmm. when people message me. Yeah, it's fascinating. Well,
that is very fascinating. So that actually really segues really well into the next question I wanted to ask, which is a question I personally wanted to ask. I think sure. all questions I ask on this show are things that
I can't analyze you.
The thing that I really was curious is, I think there's something to be said about therapy in this time, but I also think there was an interesting, maybe it was a think piece or an actual article about trying to push for therapy for those that hold office. Specifically, it was specifically brought up in relationship to, we've been calling them 45 on this show, where it's like, and obviously there are maybe specific reasons why he would need therapy, but it was more so making the point that like, this job of like managing a country,
yeah,
that person, there should be a therapist like on staff.
I thought that before too. I know that I'm pretty sure Bill Clinton used to go to a therapist, and I wouldn't be surprised if Barack Obama had ever gone to a therapist. But I mean, it's fascinating to see what kind of people get elected into power,
mm-hmm.
whether it's at the top of the country or even just locally, like in big organizations. I mean, it does, certain professions attract certain types of personalities and people,
mm-hmm.
and it's not arbitrary. And I was kind of like, in the last few months, I was thinking, well, what if the world was run by therapists? Wouldn't that be kind of cool?
Well, yeah.
Like if we had some really like intelligent feminist oriented and like liberal therapists who like have a different way of understanding human behavior, mm-hmm. and group interactions, that might do something.
Or at least have thought about it at all.
Yeah, I thought about it.
Yeah, like
you mean, yeah. use some thinking.
Yeah.
So insight. Yeah. So I thought about that, and in fact that model, the Tavistock model, I think there are people like in the military or somewhere in government that are trained in that model and do use it in terms of the way they lead and interact. So I don't know on where or what levels, but yeah, it's fascinating because I thought, well, this is like a no-brainer. You would think, of course, everyone should be doing
yeah.
it. But that's like saying everybody should go to a therapist and mm-hmm. most people don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I have a question about the logistics of CACTA.
Yeah.
So a lot of organizations will put on 4 shows a year.
Mm-hmm.
And even that is a strain.
Mm-hmm.
So your goal is to put on a show every month.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, first of all, how's that going?
How's that working for you?
How you doing? Second of all, what are the benefits and what are the challenges that you've encountered?
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my idea was initially like, oh, what if we put on a show once a month and each one to raise money for a different beneficiary, and it could be aligned with something that is going on that month. Like last month was February, Black History Month, and we did it for the NAACP. on the South Side NAACP, and that, and like in April it's Earth Day, so we're gonna do it for NRDC. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. June is Pride Month. So it was started that, yeah, that was the original thinking, and we're kind of taking the first 6 months to kind of treat it like a test for all of us to figure out how this is going to work and what are we going to do. And the idea would be that we're pretty have a skeleton crew of six people all volunteering our time to put these on. If we can continue to grow and expand and populate our committees, then it would take some of the pressure off of us, and it may help have more people involved to put on these shows. Plus, the shows aren't necessarily that complicated now that we've done a few have a few under our belt. Like, you know, if we get they're about an hour each. We get a speaker from each beneficiary. So we had like a speaker from Planned Parenthood. We have the president of the Southside NAACP. This month we have a speaker from Illinois ACLU.
Cool.
So they come and talk, and we try to center the whole event around them. Like the choice of songs is linked to the theme. So like all the people that sang at the January event, it was all in some way connected to the themes that feature Planned Parenthood. So that it wasn't like a show where you were putting on a produced show. It was an event that was to benefit Planned Parenthood. And then people would just come and sing a song of their choice that was somehow linked to Planned Parenthood. Or like last month, we had six singers, and then we had some actors phenomenal, just read some snippets of Martin Luther King speeches, and his voice is just tremendous. We had this group of poetry slam, these three teens who do poetry slam. They won the Louder Than a Bomb competition last year, Chicago citywide competition. They performed at the Kennedy Center. They're called Rebirth, and they opened our show with this amazing performance. So it doesn't have to be that time consuming. I know the first few months will be till we figure it out, but like we ask them, they come, they're like so professional, they can just show up, do a sound check, run their song one time, and then perform that night. And like, I mean, like I met all those people at the event. I mean, that's kind of how it worked.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we can do it that way and try to make it not sucking up so much of our time, then it may be doable that we can do one of these a month, and that we don't even want that event to be the main focus of what we're doing, more like this culmination of what we're doing or the launching off of what we're doing. We want the month to be all focused around whatever that month's beneficiary is. Like this month is ACLU, and we ask them to give us action items that we can keep posting and giving to our audience base and our group members, so that they can be doing the action steps all month long, and then it culminates in this event.
Cool.
So we want to start to do adjunct things too, like maybe it's a get together and do a postcard signing night, or do a breakfast call-in kind of thing, or do something at the event that's action oriented. Like the spokeswoman from Planned Parenthood that came, she shared her own personal story that led her to work for Planned Parenthood, and then she would continue to give us action items, and we would post them on our pages after the event. And you have a website now set up where you can donate through the website, and it goes directly to the beneficiary. So even if you don't go to the event, you can still donate to Planned Parenthood through us, and it will, you know, it'll that way we can say, well, we raised $2,000 for Planned Parenthood, we raised $2,000 for NAACP, and it doesn't mean you have to come to the event to do it. So, and then a lot of people who may not be able to afford more than giving the $10 or $20 to the beneficiary will feel like, well, we're part of a larger organization, so it doesn't feel like nothing, it feels like this is part of something.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our thinking. So in terms of putting on the we don't think of it so much as we're producing this show.
Like, you don't have, like, you're not worrying about, like, costumes or, like, you know, rehearsals or anything like that.
It's nothing like that. So it's a lot more, and I mean, it's not open mic. It's certainly several notches up, but it's people that are so professional and are capable and passionate about what we're doing that they want to come and say, I'll donate my time and I will come and I'll sing this song. And if they want to, they can get together with the pianist or keyboard player ahead of time and practice. Or they can just show up for the sound check and then sing. Yeah. So it's more in the planning stages. And as we populate the committees, we're thinking...
It'll be a little more streamlined.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking... It's not unrealistic to think we could do
it's
one.
It's very realistic. And I'm... So I actually do Opera on Tap Chicago.
Yeah.
Listeners, I've probably mentioned this before. But and we do a monthly show.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and it's very similar. It's all opera. So that... What the actual music is going to be is a lot easier to figure out probably than like how is this going to fit into the beneficiary. But we do have a theme every show,
right?
And so all of our singers email in and say, oh, this is something that I could sing that fits the theme, and then we make the program based on that.
Yeah,
we have
similar.
We have a venue that we work with every month, and of course, like what you were saying, this is 3 years now I've been doing this. The first few months it was exactly like you're saying. Is this going to work?
Right.
Like, are we going to get through this? But then after that, you figure out, like, okay, here's the things we have to have at each show, and then that's all I'm going to worry about. And we have people helping. And so my point in all of this is to say to you and to anyone else that's kind of thinking about that monthly frame,
yeah,
it totally works.
Thanks.
And it's there's a an adjustment period, as there is with anything. But
yeah. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Because that's one other thing. You know, we're...
Right.
I think it can work, but it could be naive, but so far it's been working. We just need to grow. As we continue to grow, people at each event, as people, you know, I'm apparently really good at schmoozing now.
Yeah.
So everywhere I go, like if I'm at a restaurant or I went to two plays Saturday, I'm like, oh, hey, by the way, here's my business card. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this thing. You might want to give us some raffle prizes for our next venue, or you may want to come... be part of our group. And most people are like really excited about what we're doing and want to help.
And the key to good schmoozing is always having something upcoming.
Yeah.
So that's why the monthly comes in handy.
Yeah.
Then you go like, oh, just come out to our next show. Whereas like most of the time, if I were working on a production or something and I wouldn't know what to say, where it's
right.
like, I don't know what my next project is. And like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's why a lot of artists have trouble promoting themselves just like in a vacuum. Because it's like, oh, like when I say I'm an opera singer and people ask me, oh, where do you sing? It's like,
I know.
My shower.
Yeah.
Now.
What theater are you working with? But it's so much easier because I don't think I'm self-promoting as an actor.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, it's so much easier to ask for... like shamelessly, can you guys give us a gift certificate or donate some tickets? Because it's for this as opposed to it's for me.
Right.
So it's somehow it's easier.
Yeah.
And everyone, because I mean, I don't think I've met anyone that isn't like, when they hear about it, they're like, oh my God, that's a great idea. I want to help. So that helps too. Of course, we live in a bubble.
Yeah.
It's called Chicago.
And that's the thing I know you were mentioning earlier about. When you were talking about the week after the election, you were talking about how a lot of your clients, is that the right word?
Colleagues, patients.
They were talking a lot about going home and the holidays. I think that's such an interesting thing where so many of us city-dwelling folk are in that box of being like, you know, I love my family and I'm really excited to see them on the holidays. A lot of us travel home for holidays and stuff like that. But, you know, like, some of our families are racist, you know, and, like, I think that's an interesting thing for, there's a lot of people that live in cities that find themselves in that place.
Well, and we had a couple friends who decided ultimately not to go home for certain holidays because, you know, like, the person who watched our cats while we were out in a... for Thanksgiving and Christmas, like the two people who watched our cats decided not to go home, which like great for us because they watched our cats, but also like, you know, the fact that they felt like they couldn't go home because they were afraid of the scrutiny that they would fall under.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's sad. I mean, there's a reason a lot of us might gravitate towards moving to these cities, right? Yeah. Like a lot of the LGBT community is going to move to New York, LA, Chicago, just because they'll feel more safer and welcome and find more people like them. And I think a lot of artists obviously move to the theater cities too, not just because there's a huge community for artists and actors, and but because we feel like we're among like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying in the therapy world that's like, well, your family isn't necessarily the family you're born into, it's the family you create as you're an adult.
Well, and what's cool is that, so, and we've talked about this before, but we host a dinner every Sunday of, it's called Sunday Dinner.
That's original.
we're innovators. What we do is we make the same meal every week. We make a vegan baked ziti, we make garlic that bread, and we make homemade sauce.
Okay.
And
I'm coming to you. Next.
I grew up.
Oh, wait, I have a show. I'll come in 2 weeks.
Cool. Okay. Well, because we
you're invited, by the way. Thank Please you. Do come. Yeah.
I would love a homemade ziti, vegan ziti. That, like, my mouth is watering. And I didn't get my donut yet.
Testament to what we're talking about, I grew up in an Italian family. Food was always really important.
Right.
And then I moved to a city, went vegan shortly thereafter. It was like, fuck, man. Like, I need ziti. Like, I need pasta and, like, flavorful, meaty sauce. And so, like, figuring out recipes like that was crucial. And so then letting that grow into an extension where it's trying to build a community, even just for me, like, I get a giant thing out of having people that I can reach out to.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar. Like, I was vegan for 7 years, right? And
mm-hmm.
it's easier now. But being in Chicago makes it easier to be vegan than it would if you're living in a small town somewhere. I mean, there's just so much out there now that makes it easier to live a vegan lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar. And we're like, you were talking about the people afraid to go home for the holidays.
Yeah.
Well, for years, I've been working with LGBT clients, patients who were afraid to go home for the holidays because of that.
Yeah.
So, like, anyway, before this even happened, this thing called the election, people were afraid to go home for the holidays. That's always been a thing for certain populations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're afraid of what it's going to, you know, most therapists probably have the experience that the week after Thanksgiving and the week after Christmas, most of their patients come back and are puddles because, like, they've had these horrible experiences. And I thought, I don't get these holidays. Isn't holidays supposed to be, like, a happy thing?
Yeah.
And for most people, it's never. So it's sad. It's a sad thing. But the people that were afraid to go home this year all came back and were surprised that it actually went a lot better than expected. Their families were much more accepting and tolerant. And it seems like people are being nicer to each other.
There's a far-reaching fear, I think. Even some people that I know that are conservative, that make conservative choices, there's something, I don't know, and maybe this is me just being hopeful, but I feel like there's something behind their eyes where they're going, like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I did this because I'm afraid, and...
Yeah, I think this is generalistic? It's general, but it's simplistic and general. That's generalistic. I just made that up. So,
nailed it.
My experience as a therapist and person has been most people are based, their choices are based out of fear. That's your ankle.
Yeah. I have weird ankles. Start over. I'm sorry. I cut you off entirely.
That's all right. That most people's decisions are based on fear. And like, it's, even if they're not conscious of the fact that they're afraid and they may be hiding with anger or righteousness or whatever it is, it seems like at the crux of it is real fear. Like, when I lived in Milwaukee, I met people that had never left Wisconsin.
Yep.
And they were afraid. When I said I'm moving to Chicago, which is 90 minutes away, these people were like, oh, you have to be really careful. You're going to get mugged. And I'm thinking, you never went to Chicago? It's 90 minutes away. You live in Milwaukee. That's sad. Or there were people that, like, are afraid to eat Thai food. And so...
Yeah.
But which it's all fear.
It's so good.
It is so good.
So, no, well, and I mean, so, and there are even people within Wisconsin that are afraid to go to Milwaukee.
Wow.
Which is crazy to think about.
That blows my mind.
Like, my family hosted a lot of exchange students when I was growing up, which was so cool.
That's a great experience.
Oh, yeah. One of the exchange students that we hosted, we only hosted for about a week, but it was part of this cool initiative within the program that we worked with was AFS, which is the American Field Service, and they facilitate exchange programs for people in other countries to come to America, and then America to go to other countries, like, and it's, and not even necessarily involving America, like, you know, it's just exchange programs, which is amazing. And
where did you have, like, from what countries did you have people?
When I was born, there we had an Italian guy. Mm-hmm. His name was Massimo.
of course.
Yes, there was when I was a sophomore in high school, we had a Norwegian girl. Her name was Karina. We had another Italian guy. His name is Jack.
Look at that. Now you're with an Italian guy.
My brother... Yeah, exactly.
I'm not analyzing. Yeah.
my brother went and lived in Finland for 6 months.
Oh, cool.
So he now speaks Finnish, which is amazing. But
this is the type of life experiences we all need. Like, I spent my junior year of college in London, and it's like one of the best experiences I've had.
I spent a summer in Germany.
Amazing, right?
Yeah. But there was this cool initiative that AFS did where they took exchange students that were living in a rural city and had them live with a more urban family. So for some reason, my family was considered urban. We lived in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, the first suburb west of downtown. And we had a Danish guy whose name was Kip stay with us for a week who... His exchange family, his host family lived in like Wausau, Wisconsin, which is like north central Wisconsin. And he came to our house and he was like, wow, it's so like nice and peaceful here. Like everyone told me that it was going to be really dangerous.
In Wisconsin?
In Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee.
I told all my friends. Yeah, in Wauwatosa.
Which is the suburb of Milwaukee.
Well, it has that reputation.
Yeah, no, Wauwatosa. You gotta be careful of those Tosa people. Absolutely. No, but I mean,
there's a Cocker Spaniel that can be walking down the road that'll look at you funny.
Yeah, and like, you gotta clutch your pearls.
You gotta be careful about that yoga studio on 68.
Oh, man.
I've gotta say, when I moved to Milwaukee, it was soon after the Jeffrey Dahmer incident. So all I knew about Milwaukee was Jeffrey Dahmer, Laverne and Shirley, and Happy Days.
That's
so
pretty standard.
I don't know where I'm going. And then I was like walking to the Milwaukee Rep one day. I'm like crossing the street and like a cop like was going to almost ticket me for jaywalking. And I'm like, what? Like, this doesn't happen. I mean, there was like this very Germanic culture
bored.
To the...
My mom...
they were bored.
My mom calls it... So whenever I talk to my mom about like the difficulties of living in Chicago versus living in Milwaukee, she's like, well, Milwaukee's so easy to live in because there's Ordnung, which is German for like order and cleanliness and and like rules and stuff. So like that's what you get in Milwaukee is you get Ordnung, whereas in... Chicago, there is no Ordnung. Very little Ordnung.
It has other names.
Yeah. So, Yeah, I think, you know.
This German stuff is fascinating. We just did our
Zitz probe.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what that was. I'm learning a lot of music terms.
It's a sit try.
Yeah. But I was endlessly fascinated all day Friday with this word Zitz probe. I'm like, oh, this is...
Have you had your Vandal probe yet?
No, we don't get to have a Vandal probe. Mm. Well, maybe. Well, wouldn't that just be our dress rehearsal?
Yeah, it's Vandal probe is the piano dress.
But then my college theater teacher reminded me, no, you've had a Zitz probe before. When we did Happy End, Kim Kwaki, the head of our music department, who's the president of the Kurt Weill Foundation, made us have a Zitz probe with the Eastman School of Music Opera.
Oh, wow.
I mean, orchestra. Mm. I was like, oh, we did? Was it helpful? I'm like, I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's a neat thing, though.
Yeah.
So I was like, all day, I'm like, what's this Zitz probe? Mm. But it was so hot in the room by the end, I was like, this is more like a Schwitz probe. I know.
We're a very pro-Yiddish podcast.
Yeah.
Pro-Yiddish.
Yeah. That's my political party.
I know, because I think the Jew in me was like, I'm going to so many inappropriate places with this word. Yeah. No, when I moved to Milwaukee, people were like, I've never met a Jew. I'm like,
yeah,
what do you
mean? That's real.
You have Whitefish Bay. It was real, and I'm from New England, so it was not much of a thing in Connecticut. But when I moved out here, it's a thing.
Yeah.
So.
No, I did not grow up in a very diverse environment.
No, you didn't.
I think, to my knowledge, there were like 3 Jewish people at my high school. My dad was a lawyer, and so some of his colleagues were Jewish, and we went and had Sabbath dinner with them once, and it was a culture shock for 9-year-old Maureen. It's like, because they were Orthodox.
Oh.
And so, like, we Ooh. Had to, I had to, like, wear a hat.
Yeah.
And I was like,
That's
why
like
do,
hardcore.
I was like, why do I have to wear a hat?
Right?
And my dad was like, don't ask for that, please.
Chill.
Yeah, like, please don't ask why you have to wear a hat. Like, that would be so...
Just do it. Just
like,
do it.
Just don't ask any questions.
Go
I know.
Along. Just
like,
go
I know,
along.
I know you're trying to learn, but, like, please be chill.
I'm
like,
know.
Why do I have to... I'm, like, taking off. He's like, put it back on, please. No, but it was just, like, it was, like, such a novelty for me.
Right.
And then I went to music school out in Baltimore.
Okay.
Where everyone and I remember being 18 and foolish, and not foolish, but like 18 and just like sheltered.
Yeah.
And like one of my best friends was Jewish, and I was like, "So tell me about that. Do you have to wear a hat?" Like, but you know, that's kind of a
it's a thing.
That's like the trade-off with Ordnung, I think.
Ordnung. So what's Ordnung?
Ordnung is
Ordung.
That...
Oh, that's the, like, the order, though.
Yeah, Ordnung is that, like, it's going to be organized, but boy, oh boy, are you going to not know a lot of things.
That's right. Growing up Jewish as a little Jew boy, I, like, had the opposite thing with, like, people who were Christian.
Because
we were all, like, our parents would always be like, don't say there's no Santa Claus. You can't tell them there's no Santa Claus. And we'd always be like, that's ridiculous. What's this Santa Claus thing? And what do you mean there's a big bunny rabbit on there? Yeah. And so we were told, like, we were, like, taught Coach. Not to tell people. You can't tell the other kids. There's no real Santa Claus. And then my neighbor across the street, who I was friends with, who was Italian, invited me over one year to help decorate the tree. And I thought, oh, that's cool. I've never done anything like that. So I went over, and I was, like, really young, and I just innocently asked, so what's with the 12 days of Christmas? Is that how long it takes to clean up? And they never asked me back. But, I mean, I didn't know.
That's such a cute question. Is that how long it takes to clean up? Oh, my God.
So... Look at you trying like, to. Oh, you mentioned something I wanted to get back to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something you said triggered something in my mind, which reminded me. So our group, we've been trying to get clearer about who we are and who we aren't. And one of the things we discussed was that we don't want to be partisan, so we're clearly political,
right?
But we aren't partisan. So, like, I think this goes back to something you were saying, that there's a lot of Republicans. I mean, there's a lot of people that are Republicans, but they will still support the same causes and organizations we're supporting. They might be, like, there's a lot of people I know in New York who voted Republican purely out of their pocketbooks.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But they're not gonna, they're not anti-gay. They're not
right. And there's even, like, a thing of Republican feminism.
Exactly. And there's a gay Republican, the Log Republicans, right? So these people would still support Planned Parenthood, would still support the Trevor Project and NAACP. So we don't want to, like, distinguish our, like, be excluding people just based on party preferences in that way.
Yeah.
So we're, but that's different than political. Like, we're clearly it's political because it was inspired by the election.
Yeah.
But that's different, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that that's a really important thing to remember, is that in this, I think that what we're facing right now is not a matter of Democrats versus Republicans.
Right.
This is a matter of our civil those who support our civil liberties versus people who hope to limit them.
Right.
And not just limit them, and limit them specifically for marginalized citizens, but ultimately for everybody.
Right. Our whole point is to be raising money and awareness for groups of people, for the civil liberties of all Americans, especially those who are now most threatened or in danger under the current Trump administration. Mm-hmm. So it's a positive, like, message that we're wanting to help the civil liberties of people. We're not saying we're anti these people, right? We're not anti-Republican or what. It's not like that. So, and also from the group dynamics perspective I was telling you about, I'm always very cautious. I think it's very dangerous for any of us to be very black and white about things, or all or nothing, and say, well, it's all red or all blue. And, like, then we get really polarized into just putting people into just two different categories and camps. And things are always much more complex, and people are more complex, and nothing is so simple that way. And I think it's easy for people on both sides to think that about the other party. Like, Stephen Colbert had this amazing show. The night of the election, he had a show, right?
Yeah.
Did you see? And I just saw, like, his last 10 minutes. And
where he was like, it looks like he's going to win, so let's unpack it.
Yeah, but he was also like, and then it's been a rough couple years. Let's get back to our lives. But he said, I mean, he said something to the point of, you know, he said statistically there's about 50% of Republicans were afraid of Democrats and 50% of the Democrats were afraid of Republicans, and they're viewing the same things from their own lenses. So, and then I have you ever heard Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah
he wrote The Tipping Point and Blink and Outliers, and he has this amazing podcast called Reconstructionist History. And his very first one, which was, like, over a year ago, was called The Lady Vanishes. And it was all about this idea. It focused on this female artist in Britain back in, like, maybe the 1800s, when you couldn't be a female painter. And, like, she had a painting. No one knew who painted it. And it became really famous. And then they realized it was this woman painted it. And they put it into the society where you and they voted to see if they would elect her into the society as the first woman, and she lost by, like, 2 votes. And then she just vanished. And they talked about how this kind of thing, like, keeps happening all across throughout history, and at the end they listed, like, all the countries that have had a female leader only one time. And it's, like, chilling. And he said, and this is, like, a year before the election, right?
Yeah.
So it's similar to the model from a different perspective, but it's kind of the same idea of thinking about how these things happen on such a deep-rooted, unconscious level. It's fascinating.
Cool.
So I just think it's dangerous if any of us, even when we're being very, you know, coming from a great place, well intended, but then we're unintentionally being excluding this other side, then it's not, then it's like, then we're no longer, we're no better than them. And it's a very dangerous place to be, I think, if we get polarized in that way. So I'm just very much always thinking from that perspective.
Yeah, like, let's be careful with any negative language.
It's like, what's the thing? Like, it's the people, it's hard, the people that would be the hardest for us to like and accept are the people we should be working the hardest to like and accept, right? I mean, isn't that, I'm not a Christian, but isn't that the whole tenet of the actual religion that, like, Jesus would have said?
Yeah. We're so far from
like that at this point. I mean, we never got past Moses, so I don't know about you guys, but wasn't he one of us?
But there's a lot.
But the idea being that you're supposed to love and embrace the people that are the hardest people to love and embrace, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, didn't Jesus supposedly...
The poor, the homeless, the...
Prostitutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so... But it's just as hard, I think, for us, people that would say they're progressive or liberal, Democrats, whatever it is, to be willing... Like, if I had a thing... I don't have any patients that I know of that are Republicans, but if I did... I wouldn't just kick them out.
Yeah,
oh,
no.
God, no.
It would, but it would be difficult, I think, if I knew that I had a patient that voted for Trump and supports Trump now, let's say. It would be a struggle for me as a therapist to be working with this person, but I would have to, I would want to find a way to somehow connect with this person and get underneath whatever's going on, because I think that would be more valuable than just saying, oh, forget you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we've got a couple minutes left, so
that's
the
it.
Last thing. Yeah. It goes by fast, I'm telling you.
It does.
So the last thing we always do with our guests is we want to make sure that you have a solid plug, minute long, for what you have upcoming. So please tell us about your most upcoming project.
Yeah, so our next event is 2 weeks from today on March 20th. It's at La Taberna Tapas on Halsted in UIC Village, which is cool. This amazing tapas restaurant. It's at 1301 South Halsted. And we have this amazing evening planned. The beneficiary is ACLU, the Illinois chapter of ACLU. We have a speaker from ACLU coming to speak. And we have this lineup of amazing actors and singers performing at the event. We have... a guest host, which is Avi Roque, who sang at our first event, and Avi is identified as trans Latinx, which is super exciting, because we want to obviously represent the Hispanic community as well as the LGBT community as being threatened specifically, and the ACLU fits right in. But we also have all these amazing singers coming. We have Isabel Quintero, she played the grandmother in the Heights at Porchlight last year. We have Ross Lehman, who was on Broadway and is a staple of Chicago theater. He's been around for quite a long time, has like performed at all the top theaters here. He does a lot at the Shakespeare Theater and the Goodman, and I mean, he's incredible. I can't believe we have these people coming. But we have this guest speaker. We have Irvine Welsh, who wrote Trainspotting, and that became the movie Trainspotting. And he's a Scottish immigrant that lives in Chicago, and he just wrote a second book, or another book, called Porno, and it's going to be made into, I think, Trainspotting 2, the next movie. And he's going to come talk at our event for a few minutes. I know, I'm usually, my resting face at these events is this. You can't see me, but...
Yeah.
Like, my jaw's just dropped, because I'm like... I mean, every single performer at all of our events so far has all two of our events.
Yeah.
But, and this one, I mean, every single one of them is, like, stellar. I mean, I knew these are great people, but I didn't know a lot of them. And I see them, and they just bring it. And, like, every single performer is, like, jaw-dropping good. And so it's just incredible. So our event's on the 20th. The tickets are $20. You can get them on our website, which is... ChicagoActorsCTA.org, And you can also go on the website to sign up so to get, you know, to be kept in the know about mm-hmm. who we are and get posted. And you can also, if you can't go to the event, you can donate through our website very easily to the ACLU or whatever beneficiary you want. We still have Planned Parenthood and NAACP there. And we keep growing that. And then we have Facebook pages, CACTA hyphen the Chicago Actors with an apostrophe after Actors Call to Action. That's our public Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So just ways to find us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening. On that note, I'm going to give you our ways to find us. We've been Scoppy Radio. Our website is scoppymag.com. You can head there to find recent articles, old articles. You can find us on Facebook under Scoppy Magazine. You can find us on Instagram at Twitter. Instagram and Twitter. We are at Scoppy Mag on both of those.
And as always, you can head to our website and donate. If you go to the About section, you can become a monthly subscriber, or you can do a one-time donation. If you become a subscriber, we will give you a shout out on the show. Speaking of which, we've got to do that.
We don't have time though. We'll do one of them.
We'll do both. Come on.
I've got one for you.
We would like to, first of all, shout out...
Evita Tremblay.
Oh.
No, we already did Evita.
No, we didn't.
Oh, Evita Tremblay.
Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Tiara, you're right.
Yeah.
Tiara Birch. Shout out Tiara Birch.
Tiara. She owes me a boozy milkshake.
Yeah.
And also to Joe Riggenbach.
Mm-hmm.
Our first Milwaukee interview. And just...
Both amazing people.
Both of you. Thank you so much. When we got the notifications for those two donations, I was sitting in the car with Daniel. We had just overspent our grocery budget. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are we going to do? And then Daniel looked at his phone and he was like, we just got two more subscribers. And I started crying. So, you know, you may not think that donating to this radio show is going to do anything, but it so deeply impacts us and mm-hmm. it so affects our day-to-day lives. And this has been so fulfilling. And so anything you can give, if it's a one-time donation, if it's a subscription, anything, we will be endlessly thankful. You will make me cry. So yeah, head to our website, give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Thanks. Go out and make something.
Yep.